Hello and welcome to episode 177 of the Saints Score, where we discuss everything going on around Southampton Football Club. Six games, no wins, another defeat and a frustrating one at that, with the Saints losing 2-0 against Crystal Palace, 4 points away from safety. It could be 40. I feel like the Saints fans would have the same amount of optimism about us surviving this season. I'm Harry Tears and I'm joined by Mikey Maisement this week. Mikey, how are you doing?
Oh, it was a fun weekend, I've got to say. It was not fun at all. The football on Saturday wasn't great. I mean, I didn't go to the Southampton Palace game. I was down at Havant instead. And I mean, we got a 90th minute equaliser from a game that we shouldn't have even been in at that point. So we got lucky with the point. It's not great when you go six games without a win, let alone six defeats in a row. And when we're willing and hoping for a change in fortunes for Southampton, unfortunately, Saturday wasn't it. And it's one of the games that I think a lot of people were going, that's one of the many games that we may be able to win. I think the other two plucked out were Bournemouth and Fulham, and both of them have gone on and won massive away games for them this weekend as well. So, yeah, it's not looking amazing, I'm not going to lie. How are you doing, Tiz?
Yeah, not too bad. I mean, in those six games, we did have a couple of draws in there, but it doesn't really make too much of a difference on the table. We're still bottom of the league, but yeah, not too bad. Watched a couple of games this weekend, and I saw Arsenal drew 2-2 of West Ham, so maybe their season is... It's getting tight from there. They can still win the league. Plenty of things can happen, but that's a massive point for West Ham in their battle against relegation. But once again, we weren't able to get any on the table. And I feel like this, for a lot of Saints fans, was the last opportunity to sort of see some level of hope, some level of, you know, we could still do this. And now I feel like the circle of optimism has now broken. Eze scored twice. One goal, you know, he did really well to poach the finish. The second one, a great turn and a great shot. I know that you're not too happy with the defending for the second one, but we'll get onto that a bit later. But yeah, it's looking really tough at the moment. Before the game, team selection, Aribo is in. He was brought out of the cold. What did you think about that? Elianusi out, someone that has been selected many a time, you know, people have been unhappy, but he's on the bench this time and Aribo came in.
I don't know. To be honest with you, I don't know. The Joe Aribo thing is he's had such a strange story at Southampton at the moment. He's going from being in a European final, a year or two ago, and one of the most sought-after midfielders in the league. We managed to steal him away from Rangers and we're thinking, oh, it's an absolute bargain. We've managed to get him. And he starts life all right. I mean, it's the same as any new signing at Southampton. They score a worldie of a goal in a friendly and all of a sudden you're thinking, oh my word, this guy's amazing. And unfortunately, it's just not panned out for him. I mean, that's his first start this year. Like, he hasn't started since New Year's Eve, I want to say. So he hasn't actually started in the calendar year of 2023. So it sort of just shows what road he's sort of been down. And Aribo is always a weird one for me because it feels like the club looked at him and thought we can get him without thinking how does he fit in, because I would have thought he would have played as one of the tens. That's where I would have thought he would have played, and that's where he played on the weekend. But it doesn't look like he's there. It doesn't look like he gets the best out of him. I think if we would have moved to a 4-3-3, or maybe like a 4-2-3-1, maybe we'd get a better result out of him being in a three-man midfielder. I think that's where we might see a lot more quality from him, but that's not how we want to play. He almost, I think Adam Blackmore on the radio started talking about how he could possibly play as one of the front players. And he can use his power and his strength to sort of hold the ball up and almost be a target man. But what's the point in signing Paul Onuachu if we're not using Joe Aribo instead? So that's been my reflection on Aribo this year, is it hasn't really made... The more you think about it, and of course, like if he would have played really well and kicked off and done really great things, then you'd say, oh, it's a wonderful signing and he fits in the team really well. But he just hasn't fitted, and it was almost a surprise that he started against Palace. I think he was the big one on the team sheet that people went, what, really? But it's another game where we've lined up without a striker. It's another game where we've struggled to create chances because we're not playing a striker. And yeah, it's always going to be a struggle to play. I can't tell you how many times Palace have come down to the South Close and played low block counter-attacking football under Roy Hodgson, and it's not worked, and they've come away with points. And so we knew exactly how they were going to play, what they were going to do, and we just can't break that down. And I feel like it more and more as weeks go by, if you play on Onuachu in a game like that, it gives you a little bit more simplicity on how you can break that side down. Yeah, Anderson and Guehi are quite good aerial players, but he's 6'7". He's going to cause problems. He's going to be a threat. And it just seems, again, we've tried something, it's not worked. And it feels like sometimes there's an obvious option on the bench to go, why didn't we just use that? Which there's obviously a reason why, but it's always frustrating when you look at that lineup and go, there's no threat there. It feels like there's no threat there.
Sticking with the Aribo point, because he's someone that we've obviously haven't mentioned much this season on the podcast, because he simply hasn't been in the squad. Do you think he's been mismanaged? Do you think people don't really know what to do with him? Because I looked at the team sheet and I was the same as you when he came in, because he's almost came in out of nowhere. Yes, he was on the bench against West Ham, but you'd sort of think if Elianusi's not in the team, a player that was on the bench last week that may have got a few minutes would come in and replace him. Maybe they made an impact like Gineppo or something like that. But it's almost like he's looked at his squad and thought, how do I sort this problem? Right, let's chuck Ariba, and I've not really tried him before. Loads of people want him to play. I'm not saying that Sellers looks at Twitter. I highly, highly doubt it, but that's just sort of a tongue-in-cheek comment. But do you think he's been mismanaged? Do you think really Sellers isn't sure still about the squad that he's got in front of him?
I don't think many managers would be sure on the squad that they've got in front of him. He's got 30 players to select from every single week. It's hard for him to go, yeah, we're going to use this and that. I think from a podcast a couple of weeks before, I was talking about how Sellers sort of told a couple of players going, you're not going to be involved. I believe Aribo was one of them. I think he was one of them that was told he wasn't going to be involved. He started playing the same way that Ralph was, trying to play this 4-2-2-2 and play high-pressing football and try and get something out of them. And it's just, it feels like it hasn't worked, and he's sort of gone back on what he's doing and going, well, maybe you can have a go and we'll see what you can do now instead. You don't know what happened pre-kickoff. I know it's not come out, but Elianusi may have picked up a knock. Stuart Armstrong still not fully fit at the moment. So it may be the case that Aribo was a second thought that was the best of a bad choice of options in Sellers' opinion. I mean, I didn't see a lot of the game. The biggest impact Aribo had was spooning that opportunity over the crossbar from the corner, which is weird for me that he'd be the one running onto it if he wasn't going to be involved in the lineup beforehand or whatever. Like, so he must have been in the plans. They must have known he was playing. But yeah, he just feels... It does feel a little bit mismanaged. It feels like they don't know what to do with him because they don't know where to fit him in. And that's always an issue. I think when you look at a lot of the signings that were made in January, they were made to fit in with a certain thing, and Aribo was done 6 months earlier. But I think when you look at a lot of the signings, even signings like Samuel Adozie, who came in this year, obviously not to make a massive impact, but him being an out-and-out winger doesn't really fit with playing two tens who are going to be cutting inside and running inside. So I think we can sort of reflect on that and go, well, did we actually sign players who were going to be able to play in Ralph's system? Was that a limitation of the window that we thought was brilliant about reinvigorating the squad and bringing in youth players? So yeah, I think that's something the club have got to reflect on, and I think that's something fans can reflect on as well. And I'd be interested to, when we finally get to our end of season at the end of May and we do that massive reflection on what looks like will be a 3-hour long podcast at this rate, it would be interesting to see like what people's opinions on the signings that we did make during the summer and throughout January.
You sort of raise an interesting point about what Salah said about not wanting to use or choosing not to choose a few players when he took over the managerial role. Because I sort of feel that at the time he probably thought, I'm going to come in, I'm not going to select these three or four players that are not bad eggs, but maybe unfancied. We're going to win three out of our next five games. I'm going to surge up the league and my tactical decision making is going to be flawless. And my decisions are going to be perfect or good, at least. Whereas now, because he still hasn't quite found the long-term resolution. Yes, he got two wins in his first three games. But since then, we can see from the points table that he's struggled in the fact that he's now looking for those new resolutions to try and change what's been happening. And sadly, I don't think he can. But then again, I don't think many people would be able to either. So I'm not going to try and put too much blame on him. Going into this game in the first half, we had a decent first 45 minutes, two good chances, one from Aribo, like you said, one where Walcott smashed the side netting in Palace. But they were pretty quiet. But once again, Mike, it feels like we've had a good 45 minutes, something to build on, and then we weren't able to build on it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the story of the season where games are tight and, like, in the Premier League, you know, especially if you're us, you're not going to walk over a team. We were never going to walk over a team this season. And when you're playing against a team like Crystal Palace, when you're on top, you've got to take your opportunities. You've got to take the chances that you create. And the chances we create are very limited in what we can do. Again, it's another good first half of the tight game going in towards the second half. And Palace have created the chances and scored goals through our errors. Like, it feels like through our errors. And you're always going to concede goals through errors. But they capitalised on the mistakes that were made. And yeah, it's the same as the entire year. It's close games that if we are just on the right side of, we're not in this situation. But currently we lack chance creation, we lack a goal scorer, and therefore we lack the ability to score goals. And if you can't score goals, this is a Michael Owen thing. If you can't score goals, you can't win football matches.
He's not wrong. You're not wrong.
Yeah, exactly. That's a fact. That's not an opinion. That's a fact.
People listen to this podcast for analysis, and they've just got it. They've just got it.
That is, I don't know why you're joking here. But no, we've just, it's the story of the season.
I feel like a lot of the time, I looked at Salah's quotes after the game. I think Theo Walcott said it as well about us having a good first half. Do you feel like our standards from the hierarchy, at least from some of the players, maybe the manager as well, has lowered? Because for me, a good first half, maybe a couple of years ago, when we were playing our prime sort of Ralph ball, was absolutely dominating the first half, getting a goal, putting the team under constant pressure, getting loads of chances, not really having too just better than half chances, I'd say. Stopping the opposition from attacking, yes, but they're not doing too much ourselves either. Is that just because of the position we are on the table and we try and grab anything that we can at this very moment?
Yeah, I wonder if a good first half now is sort of limiting the opposition instead of creating chances ourselves. I mean, we did outshoot Palace, like, statistically. We had 7 shots to their 2. So we did create more than them. We did limit the opposition in that way. It felt like it was an okay performance from the highlights as well in that first half. So, it's not bad. But then again, you do say, like, if we're talking about a good first half, that was a first half to build on, and we didn't build on it. We don't build on good performances at the moment, and those are your issues when you're in the situation that we are in. A good first half is going in with a lead. You always need it. If it's a good first half, you go in with a lead. So especially at the moment, with it being results based more than performance based, it doesn't matter how good you performed if you're winning games. So yeah, it does intrigue me when people go, oh, we've had a really good first half. Because performance-wise, I'm sure they did. I'm sure it was like a decent first half. They came in, it was still 0-0. We were looking like we were on top. We were dominating the ball, but again, just lack penetration and ability to create real chances. And that's probably where they say it was good and not excellent, because we didn't create that chance that we should have. Of course, Walcott got in behind once and hit the side netting. He didn't go probably the right side of the goal. I would have thought, like, going across the keeper in that situation may have been better. Aribo had that chance from the set piece, but apart from that, I can't say about many chances that we did create in that first half.
I mean, no, on match of the day, those are the only two first half chances that I can remember seeing. And then I look at the game, and I think Walcott, he said that he should have done better with that chance as well. Half-time, 0-0, and in the second half, and it feels like a lot of times this season, the game has been swung by maybe an individual, an error or a mistake or somewhere that a player could have done better. Ayew gets down the left-hand side, he puts a cross into the box that was a dangerous one, yes, but Bazunu pushes it straight out to Eze, you know, coming out from the cold. Vieira didn't really play him too much near the end of his tenure, but Roy Hodgson, he's getting the best out of him. A simple finish. Is it just not... Where do you stand on the whole Bazunu situation? Because I feel like about a couple of months ago, we were sort of... I think half the podcast said he should be in goal, half the podcast said he shouldn't. Overall, do you think the club in general have lacked big decision makers in terms of making big decisions at the right time? Because a lot of people would say... In a relegation battle, it's probably not the best to have a 20-year-old goalkeeper and goal. Look, I wanted to keep him in and, you know, keep giving him a go, but then I'm not the one that's, you know, heads on the block if we go down.
Yeah, I think there's the fans' thoughts on probably Alex McCarthy makes a difference. Like, the reason why there's not massive uproar at the moment to get Bazunu out of goal is because of the fact that you look at Alex McCarthy, he didn't have the best end to his season. He ended up getting dropped for Fraser Forster, who the club allowed to leave on a free transfer. I'm guessing it was more his decision than our decision, but we weren't willing to pay the wages that he wanted to continue as a goalkeeper. And we probably had Bazunu lined up in our minds. That's probably why they weren't looking exactly for Forster to sign a contract, because we thought, oh, we just bring in this kid. I think the making him first choice that quickly is interesting when you do have an experienced pro like Alex McCarthy. I'm not saying McCarthy would have done better, but when you look at the numbers, which I know a lot of people don't like, but when you do look at the numbers... Alex McCarthy was a flatline goalkeeper. The only reason why he had the poor numbers over the last couple of seasons is because he was in goal for Man United when we lost 9-0. So that's the reason why he had that massive swing. And if you took that out, it wasn't that swing. When you look at Gavin Bazunu, we've conceded 14, 15 more goals than we should have done. And unfortunately, you can point fingers at Bazunu. Sometimes you go, well, the chance creation was really good and we gave away high opportunities, so that's an outfield thing. But we haven't. When you look at like our XG per shot that we've given away across the entire season, we're just below mid-table. We're not giving away big opportunities. We're not giving away chances that the opposition are basically passing the ball into the net from 4 yards. So, and there's multiple times where you can look back and go, well, he should have done better there. Like the same with this Palace thing. If he goes with two fists there instead of flapping at the cross, maybe it's cleared. And in all fairness, if you do look across the box, no one's attacking that ball that Ayew's put in. Maybe at the back post, but we've got three defenders along that line to go and clear that ball if we have to. So, I don't know. It feels like sometimes we've gone down a direction and we've gone, right, we're going to stick with this and we're going to keep going until it breaks and it doesn't work anymore. And we've got done that with Bazunu, and Bazunu just hasn't paid off. Like that decision has not paid off. He's not had this big arc. He's probably flatlined. I think he has flatlined. I think he has had some good performances, especially after the World Cup. It feels like he has been better. But this is just sort of like a dip to form again, and there's always seems to be a mistake leading to a goal, and unfortunately it's Gav again this time.
Not that I want to talk about a possible championship season, but it does feel like it's edging closer. Do you think it would be the right decision to keep him in until maybe the end of this season and then play him for the next season? Because look, he's not going to go anywhere. He probably is going to be our first choice next year. And not that, you know, with Bazunu FC, I don't want all the club's decisions to be based around his career. But what I feel like if he gets a full season in a division below and we are able to stabilise, you know, get playoffs, get promoted, something like that, then we will be able to surge up. Because I do look at us when we signed him, and although I liked it at the time, I was saying to one of my friends about a week ago, we are signing a goalkeeper 8 years before he actually hits his prime, which is quite a long way away.
Yeah, when you look in hindsight as well, the highest he'd played is League One. Like, that's the highest he had played for Pompey when he was playing down there. And yeah, he may have a good potential and a good ability right now, but it's obvious that he's not quite at the Premier League level at the moment. This might be a little bit reactionary just because it is his mistake that happened this weekend, and I think he has been better. But if you look and reflect across the entire season, you can see he wasn't ready at that point at the start of the year. And it may have cost us quite a few points when maybe if you have Fraser Forster in, or maybe if you have Alex McCarthy in, who are on that other side of their prime, but they're still good goalkeepers, maybe it doesn't go that way. I know McCarthy's been injured for a while now, but it was a huge step up for him to make. And he may be rising just a little bit too late for us. But yeah, maybe that year in the Championship would do him useful. Again, in hindsight, it may have been useful to loan him out this year and give him that year in the Championship that he may have needed instead of relying on him this year. And as you said, like, it seems like a couple of big decisions that have been made, especially over the last 2 or 3 years or so, a couple of big decisions that have been made that we just not capitalized on. Some that are obvious, like the signing of a striker maybe or something like that to help us out once Danny Ings had left the club. But it seems like there was a lot of reliance on, no, these players will get better. And I think that's something that is maybe overgiven by supporters, is that players don't always get better. That's not, unfortunately, real life's not like FIFA. You're not born with a rating and then a potential and you're definitely going to grow and hit that potential. Sometimes you don't hit that potential and you're just as good as you were as a 20-year-old or something like that. So, yeah, I think the club sort of have over-relied on players reaching a potential. You look at Che Adams and he's had some good spells as a striker, but he's not been a 15-goal-a-season striker. He's not going to be Danny Ings' replacement. And I think there was an over-reliance there of going, oh, Che's goals will get us somewhere. Because we can look at this team that's been going over for the last 2 or 3 years. There are no goals external to Danny Ings in that team, apart from James Ward-Prowse. And unfortunately, teams have learned not to give free kicks away around the 18-yard box, and not every free kick goes in, unlike most Saints fans wants to believe. So, yeah, it feels like this is probably more of an end-of-season thing than a now thing, but you can look at decisions that have been made over the last 2 or 3 years, and they've just not paid off, they've not been the right decisions, and we've struggled because of it.
I mean, you might as well pinpoint now. This is sort of a subject that I'll bring up at the end of the podcast, or the end of the season, I should say. But you've mentioned it there, so I want to mention it to you now. You mentioned about all the young players you've brought in and the technical ability and the potential. If they might reach it, they might not reach it. Do you think the club sort of underestimated the importance of the mental attributes of players, such as the leadership, such as the experience? So the people like Stevens and Romeo and characters like that going out of the squad, yes, some of them wanted to go, some of them weren't playing, so maybe that swayed their decision. But not having as many experienced heads, yes, they might not be as technically excellent or brilliant, or they might not have the potential of some of the 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds that we're bringing in, but they've got something that you can't really quantify with stats.
I think so, yeah. I think when you look at, I think the last big, especially from the academy of players coming through, the last big lot were Callum Chambers, Luke Shaw, James Ward-Prowse, when they first initially came through in, what, 2014-15, wasn't it? It was under Koeman that they really started to spark. Wrong, yeah. Pochettino and Koeman, they were the ones who got it sparking. And Luke Shaw came in to a side which had just won promotion. They were just playing under Pochettino, and that was a side that had played for 3 or 4 years, and you did have the likes of Fonte and Lambert and Lallana and players who were staples of that side. And I think what you may have missed from that list of things that you said was just a good squad. Like, it's easy to bring in Luke Shaw into that side because he's playing with players who don't just play with each other week in, week out. They're good players. you look at that squad that we had in 14-15 when we came eighth, well, 13-14 when we came eighth, four of them could have gone to the World Cup if Jay Rodriguez was fit. And so that's the quality you talk about. I mean, England anyway. I can't remember the rest of the squad, but England players, and that's hard to do for a club like Southampton. When you look at when Callum Chambers came in as well, he was with Klein, who also played in and out with him. So we just had a good squad. When you look at 15-16 and other players, like the signings that we made around there, like that was a miracle season. How we managed to cope with that and finish above what we were, that was a miracle. That's not a thing that we can do continuously and keeping quality like that. And when you look at the signings that were then made previous to that, we did have a good group around us. And I did like keep saying when Ralph was bringing in these minor players, that every summer we were signing three or four players, we had the same starting 11 for majority of that time. You think you could probably list them all off. You had Alex McCarthy in goal for that. We had like Bertrand at left back. We were playing, this is really bad now because I said we could list them off and I can't. But you know, like the mainstays, Romeo was there, Ward-Prowse was there, Stuart Armstrong was there, Danny Ings played up front with Che Adams or Shane Long. We had a squad there that, as much as, yeah, they weren't amazing players. They weren't players who were going to push to the top. They played as a team well, and they knew you could pick them up, run of results. And it's almost like we've changed too much too quickly. And it's been a massive overload in the squad, a massive reliance on younger players coming in, a massive amount of panic in January to try and get some older statements in. And it's just, yeah, it feels like too much too soon. And maybe in 2 or 3 years, if we manage to get promoted with the lads that we bought in this summer, you think, well, it wasn't that bad in the end. But if you're still stuck in the Championship, the payments have run out from the Premier League, from relegation, and all of a sudden you're thinking this is another 3 or 4 years in the Championship. You look at the bottom of the Championship and you see, what, 6, 7, 8 clubs that have all been up in the Premier League recently, and they're all struggling at the bottom of the Championship now. You go, that's not a good future for us.
Right, switching back to this game, and it was all over when Eze scored that second goal from outside the box. Mike, do you think anything could have been done to stop it? I know you said earlier that all the goals can be stopped at some point, but for me, 30 yards out, it's a brilliant finish. But if you're finding the bottom corner from that far out, if you're getting a shot away from that far out, there's at some point in that chain of action, there could have been a cutting point.
Yeah, it feels like Gineppo's sort of been sent the completely wrong direction. If I would hope, like, yes, his Eze's turn is very good. His body feint is very convincing. But I would hope that Gineppo would have defended goal side rather than try and nick the ball that way. I think that's a big issue and a big problem from that. I mean, it felt like we may have had him doubled up with Gineppo and Lavia and we would have been fine, but he's managed to wriggle a little bit of space, hit the ball through Belakotchap's legs, unfortunately, and it's gone past Bizzouni, who couldn't see it, in all fairness to him. He probably couldn't see it from that far out and through Belakotchap. So, yeah, for some reason, like when we come on these podcasts and we've lost again, it feels like it's completely null and void, maybe, talking about the game and the performance and everything like that and what could have happened and what could have changed, because it feels like every other week there's a different little thing that didn't go right, and we haven't, if it was like every single week we're going, we didn't take our chances, they had a couple of decent efforts, they went in, one of them was a mistake from us, the other one we couldn't really do much about, it was just a very good strike, and all of a sudden you're going, well, it's 1-0, it's 2-0, it's a set piece, it's this, that and the other. No set piece this week though, so that's good news, you know.
I see 3 points.
That's something, yeah, exactly. Exactly. But no, it's, yeah. I feel like Gineppo maybe could have done a little bit better with the pressing he did. But apart from that, it is a wonderful strike. And yeah, it's hard to stop them sort of things.
I mentioned Roy Hodgson and Eze bringing them out of the cold in the last three games, and they picked up 3 wins. Do you think we're missing that X factor player? I did ask Ollie this question last week. I'll ask you this week. This question, because I look at his minutes since he played against Manchester United, you know, in January, it was 17 minutes, 19 minutes, 27, 19, 75, 10, 45, 8. And then when Hodgson came in, it's 3.19 minutes in a row. I think that Man United game was in February, sorry. But it just means that he's been able to look at his squad and think, you've not been utilised. You, Vieira's not got the most out of you. I can get the most out of you. Three goals in three games, two against us, that's won the match. Do you think Selles is lacking that in his team, where he can sort of go, I can pick you up and I can bring you in and you're going to win some games?
You're talking about a 30-man squad, it is. I think there's at least a couple of players he can pick up and go, oh, man, you haven't been used a lot this year because our squad's too big, so we can pick you up from the cold and bring you in. I think the issue, again, there's many issues. I don't think it's the fact that we don't have an X-factor player. I don't think that's the thing.
Well, maybe it's a big game player or a game player. Because apart from Ward-Prowse and his free kicks, I just remember, you know, the Austins, the Gabbiadinis, the Ward-Prowse from a couple of seasons ago, the Ings, they're the people that sort of popped up at a moment when you needed a goal to win you a game. And at this point, it just doesn't feel like we've got that guy. Alcaraz has popped up with a couple. Maybe he was unlucky not to get the winner against Wolves when they got the red card and the game got overturned, but he was the winner against Leicester, so maybe that's one player that you can pick out. And he was unlucky this game, he could have got a couple, but apart from that, we don't have that sort of player, it feels like.
I get what you're saying, where it's like almost a something out of nothing player. That's what you're talking about. And I mean, when the issue is that you get those players when they're playing with confidence and when they know what they're doing and when they are sort of have an understanding. I bet you what Roy Hodgson's probably done walking into Palace, and it's probably a little bit basic for everyone to know, but Eze and Roy Hodgson had a good relationship at Palace beforehand when Roy was managing them before. He probably just walked up to him, gave him a massive hug and going, you're going to be my main man, and just stuck him in the team. And that makes you feel like a million, like you are absolutely rocketing. So when you, especially with the loss of Zaha as well, it focuses more on Eze, more on Elise to be that creative spark. But Palace came to St Mary's with a plan and executed it really, really well. And it feels like sometimes, like we keep having these meetings on the pitch and these little like tunnels and all huddles and all that sort of stuff around the pitch. And it feels like sometimes that's our main plan, is we're going to go and have a chat for 5 seconds while everyone's still on the pitch and everything's going to be okay. It sometimes feels like, yeah, we got a plan, but not all the players are behind it. They're not high on confidence and therefore it's not done at 100%. And yeah, there may be moments and you can see building and you can see better bits, but when it comes to the end of it, Palace now have a player who will happily turn and shoot from 30 yards, which is something that we don't do. It's almost like everything's a second thought. It's not just done. It's not automatic. Like when Ralph was here, he always talked about automations and stuff like that. It's not automatically done. Like there's always like a, oh, maybe not. Or like if they get to the byline, instead of just hitting the ball into the box, you're going, actually, no, I'm going to cut back and then we're going to move the ball back around. And because no one wants to lose the ball. And that seems to be the issue. We're not taking the risks needed to create the chances because the players don't have confidence, because they don't, at the end of the day, really know what they're doing, because this year they've been throwing left, right and centre with the amount of managers and people in the building, out the B building, new signings, players leaving, all this sort of stuff. It's just been a massive... I feel sorry for them, how much they've been pulled apart this year and what the expectations on them have been this season. This is probably one of the most difficult seasons they're ever going to go through, some of the staff are ever going to go through, some of the higher-ups at Southampton are ever going to go through. Because it's just been poor decision after poor decision after poor decision.
Do you think that's the main factor then? Because when you think about it, it's two different managers' transfer windows mixed with three different managers' tactics. It's sort of, yes, a lot of people don't think the players have got the quality, which is probably a fair statement in itself as well. They don't have the right amount of experience and all of that pushed together, but simply due to the fact that there's so many players, there's so many different ideas floating around. Some players will be thinking, oh, I'd liked it better with Hasenhüttl. There might be one in there that thinks they liked it better with Jones. Maybe James Bree's thinking that. after being let out in the cold quite a lot. A lot of people might like Selez more, but maybe his tactical instruction aren't as clear. I don't know. I'm not on the pitch. I've not been able to listen to him. But do you think that is the main factor? There's just so many things going on at once. You don't know who to listen to, you don't know what to listen to, and it just caused a whole lot of confusion.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. They've had three managers. What Hasenhüttl left with his assistant, so that's two managers out. Well, two coaches out the door. They had three coaches in with Luton, with Nathan Jones coming in. Three or four coaches coming in with him. They all left. They've now got David Horseman, who's part of the academy. They had that massive mix-up at the start of the year as well, with a load of coaching staff leaving, a load of coaching staff bringing in. They've had the higher ups have had the whole Joe Shields and everything like that rigmarole happen to him at the start of the year. And then there's been turnovers continuously throughout the year of higher ups coming and going and everything like that. We've had a window with Joe Shields in charge with Ralph Hasenhüttl. We had a window with Rasmus Anglicanson in charge with Nathan Jones. We have Ruben Sells coming. And there was no alignment on what this season was going to be and who were the best players for us to bring in, what were the best things that we could possibly do. And that's been the issue this year. And that's what the club have to sort out in the summer. It's not the fact that the players are rubbish. It's not the fact that the coaching staff are rubbish. It's not like the board are. It's just get your ideas together. Take the summer, get your ideas together, come up with a plan of what you want to do and how you want to do it. And let's do it. And if it works, it works. If not, it doesn't. But let's at least look organised. Let's look like we know what we're trying to do and a goal that we're trying to achieve. Because at the moment, it is literally just the players don't know where to look half the time, I'm pretty sure. Right? Who's the person in charge? Do you know how many set-piece coaches we've had this year?
I don't know if this is a rhetorical question, but I'm going to go four.
We've had four set-piece coaches this year.
Come on.
Like, and if you include Dave Watson from last season, that's five. We had five within a season when Dave Watson got sacked as a set-piece coach. You tell me what the plans are for it. It's just, yeah, the organisation from the club this year has been very poor. And, of course, it's a mixture of everything. You can have poor organisation at a football club. You can have the most aligned system and you can have a season like Liverpool. Like, look at Liverpool, look at Chelsea. Chelsea is a mass turnover of everything with massive money spending and it's not going well for them. Liverpool are stuck with Klopp the entire year and it's still not going well, even though they're supposed to be all aligned and the players know exactly what they're doing. There's not been a massive turnover at Liverpool and both have just gone poorly. So sometimes it doesn't matter if you're aligned or if you're spending £600 million over a season. Like, it doesn't matter. But it feels like it might run a little bit better if everyone knew what path they wanted to take. And so, yeah, that's what the club have to get sorted in the summer. And I do feel sorry for a lot of people there because it's not their fault that this is how it's turned out to be. And this is the situation they have to deal with.
Right, we'll play the blame game at the end of the season. But right now, we know the path that we're going on. Arsenal away from home, Friday night. It's on the box, so I'm looking forward to being able to watch it. Mikey, what are you expecting from Arsenal? Two games in a row, they've gone 2-0 up and drawn 2-2. One at Anfield, which was, in the end, a respectable point, one they'd certainly take after a couple of really good Ramsdale saves and the Salah missed penalty. But going 2-0 up against West Ham at the London Stadium within, 10, 11 minutes, and getting pulled back, missing a penalty themselves, and now sort of shaking in the title race. What are you expecting from them? Because for me, their nerves might be jangling a bit.
I mean, they probably need something good from this game, because the next game's City after us. That's how big that sort of week is. They've got City 5 days after they play against us. So, yeah, I think they will start feeling the pressure. They've got City who, I mean, if they would have continued with how they were playing against Leicester, it could have been 9. They were that good for the first half an hour. Yeah, they dropped off. Leicester started coming back really nicely and they started doing well. But they were battering Leicester for the first half an hour and they weren't stopping. When they came down here against us, yeah, it took them a little bit of time to get going. But my word, in the second half, they were electric. They just split us apart constantly. Jack Grealish looks like he looks like a completely different player in a year. You've got the old Jack Grealish back, and now he's playing with Kevin De Bruyne and Erling Haaland. So yeah, it's a scary prospect to come up against. And this is their time to sort of decide, but they've got to win against us. They have to win against us. It's a home game on a Friday night. They can put a little bit of pressure on City before their game on the weekend to try and force them into a win. They can clamber back, because the draw at Anfield, I think they probably were happy to leave with before the game, so they'd be happy to leave with after the game. That West Ham game, they would have thought they would have won, and they haven't. And City have caught them back a little bit more, and all of a sudden, things are looking a little bit shakier in the title fight. So, yeah, they have to win against us.
What are you expecting from us from this game? It feels like we say this every single time and then the exact same thing happens. Do you think anything will change? Do you think we'll play with a striker this game? Because Sellers said that it wouldn't have made a difference for the last one. But we're playing against a different team, so he might choose a different style.
I doubt it. I doubt that Onoachi will start. I'd like him to start, but I do doubt if he will. I don't think he will. I think it will be very similar to how we lined up against Man City. We're going to look to play on the break. We're going to look to exploit space when we can. We're still going to look to pressure them. And if it comes off, it comes off and we get a result. Fantastic. But it feels like eventually Arsenal will break us down. We will make an error in our press. We'll be a little bit too enthusiastic in what we want to do. And Arsenal will break us down.
I mean, yeah, they did thrash us 3-0 last year with a couple of really, really good passing moves. I think it was last season anyway, at the Emirates. And I mentioned last week against Manchester City that it was no longer a free hit because we are in a serious relegation battle and we need to win every game to stay within the league. But now it feels like it's gone so far the other way that it now does feel like a free hit because we're in a relegation battle, but we're... And I know we're only 4 points away, but it feels like because we're so much off the pace compared to maybe the teams above us that we can sort of play the... I think West Brom had it a couple of seasons ago under Darren Moore, where they started, you know, winning a couple of really good games. I think, you know, under Sam Allardyce as well, only a couple of seasons ago, I think they beat Chelsea 5-2. They beat us 3-0 when they seemed to be completely down and out. Look, they still got relegated. They started playing a lot better when they almost lost all hope of staying up.
It's almost like the pressure comes off you, isn't it? Like if the expectations are that you're going to go down, it's sort of like, well, that's it then. And then there's not nothing to play for, but there's no expectation on you. There is no expectation on us to go and win at Arsenal. There isn't. I think there was a lot of, if you look back at the fixtures that have happened over the last couple of weeks or so, there was a lot of expectation on Palace to get something. There was a lot of expectation at West Ham to go and get something. There was a lot of expectation at Brentford to get something. Those games were quite big in our year, in our season. And we didn't. And so I think for the next 6 or 7 games, I think the fans have gone, well, it's not gone well, so we're probably not going to get something. I'll say that. And then Thursday night, we're down in Bournemouth. Well, we're at home against Bournemouth, and that's going to be a huge game for us because that may well be it. I've just looked at the SofaScore website, sorry, to have a look at the fixtures, and Romeu's our 9th best player this year, having played once.
he scored today, Sunday that we're talking. So, that's painful.
Not good. Painful. But this is a game where, again, there's no expectations. So there's no expectations against Tottenham. We did all right, and we got that point, and that was a good point to get. Against City, there was no expectations, and it didn't go as well as we wanted to. That goal just before half-time was a massive difference. So, yeah, I mean, we've just got to go out there, try our hardest, go out there with a plan, see if it works. If it doesn't work, stick Big Paul on there and actually launch a ball towards him, because they didn't do that on Saturday. So I think that might be what needs to do just to cause a little bit of chaos.
Right, it's our favourite time of the podcast. It's score prediction time. And I think the last few games, I didn't predict us to lose. Actually, no, against Manchester City, I did, so I was correct in that. I think I said we beat Palace, so I was wrong in that. I'm going to say a 3-1 loss at the Emirates Stadium. Mikey, what do you think?
I would have thought it'd be 2-0 to Arsenal. I think they'll have their quick starts like they've been having, and we just can't fight back against it. I think that will what will end up happening. I think if there is a change in style, and I think if we do have Onoachu up top, I think it does make a difference. I think it would make a difference. Che Adams maybe as well, if he's fit for it, I think he can make a difference. But yeah, I can't see us doing that. But on a more positive note, I just want to do this before we ended the podcast. I went down to Staplewood on the Friday night to go and watch the B team play against Stoke City. And yes, Stoke aren't having the best season this year, but it was still a really good performance down there. It was great to see Tino play for 45 minutes. It was wonderful to watch him. You can tell there weren't many lung-busting runs down the right-hand side at that point. And there was one moment during the games where he got completely wiped out by a Stoke player and everyone sort of went, oh no, because we didn't want anything to happen to him. But yeah, he played a good 45 minutes. He made two or three really good runs down the right-hand side and it was like he was flying again and he was back. But of course, he's still got a long way to go. Probably won't see him for the rest of the season, I wouldn't have thought, and hopefully we can just keep him in a bubble wrap towards next season, and fingers crossed we get the best out of him again. But the amount of talented players that are playing in, they're in under 21 games, so you can have three players over the age of 23 and you can have 21 play, like under, you have to be 21 to play in that league. And we had 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds, 18-year-olds playing in that game, and we battered Stoke. It was tight in the first half, but as soon as the youngsters came on who are used to playing with each other like continuously, Stoke didn't even have a sniff for the last half an hour. It was unbelievable. They were so good. But it's just it's kind of sad seeing James Bree and Adam Armstrong playing football for the B team, having been fantastic players in the Championship. But no, it was really good to watch him play. They confirmed their playoff place for the Premier League to second division playoffs. So fingers crossed they can get promoted there, because a lot of those lads will have the quality to step up into the next division. If not, I can see a lot of them going out on loan next year, because they're too good to be playing in the second division of the under 21 league. They need to be playing football. So yeah, no, it was really good to go and watch them, see a really good Southampton performance and a team that are obviously together with a lot of quality in them. I mean, Dom Ballard he's really good. He is really good.
Well, apart from Dom Ballard, you're a scout, you're an analyst. In 10 years' time, who out of that academy is going to be the one where you go, he's had a fantastic career? Because I was going to say 5 years, but if you pick a 16, 17-year-old, they're only going to be 22 by that point. So I want someone near the end of their prime in 10 years' time. Who's the one that you're going to look at and go, he is going to make it? He's going to be a top player, whether it's for us or whether it's for somewhere else. And we can react to it in 10 years' time.
So it's a lot of pressure because, yeah, you're going to make your decision now. And you're going to predict him. Because you don't like some guy could have two ACL injuries in a row.
Exactly, yeah.
It just means nothing. But Samuel Mweyu, I want to say that's his name. He's the lad we got from Tottenham earlier this year. He's one of the 16-year-old lads we signed. He's still 16 now, and he's playing at under 21 level, and he looks like a good player out there. That's how good he is at the moment. And of course, it doesn't mean that he's got amazing potential. Maybe this is where he just stays, but the speed he has, the ability on the ball to take on players, he created three or four chances for himself just taking on players and dragging it past people. So he's a very exciting prospect. He's got a long way to go, being 16, and he does have a long way to go, but he's been playing for England for the 17s. He looks like he's got a really bright future ahead of him. But fingers crossed, he's got 2 years of development in the academy. Maybe get him a loan spell when he's 18, because I think it's illegal to do under 18 loans. But yeah, he's got 2 years in the academy where he can develop good, get a little bit bigger, because he was bodied a couple of times throughout that game. But yeah, get him a little bit bigger and he'll be a good player.
Right, that's all we got time for this week's podcast. We talked about Crystal Palace. We talked about Eze and him being the X Factor player that we're possibly missing. We talked about Ruben Selles, his tactical decision making, and also the confusion just around the entire squad. We previewed Arsenal and Mikey picked the next Lionel Messi. Next week, we'll be previewing Bournemouth in the Premier League and Newcastle United, as well as reacting to the Arsenal game. Hopefully, it'll be 3 points. I've been Harry Tizard. I've been joined by Mikey Maidment.
Thanks for that, Tiz. Thank you for listening.
And we'll see you next week.